You're listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program. I'm Lauren Reese, and in today's episode, I have the privilege of speaking with Steve Gale, a senior futures advisor at USAID, who leads USAID's foresight team. In a world marked by increasingly complex challenges, the ability to apply today's tools and knowledge to plan for the unexpected 5, 10, 15 years from now is critical. One tool commonly used by the military, intelligence community, and private sector is scenario planning. But scenario planning has also proven to be an important tool for the development community, and USAID is now standing up a strategic foresight unit to provide the forecasting and scenario planning needed to prepare for a rapidly changing future. While the unit is new, foresight at USAID is not. And in our conversation, Steve shares how foresight has been utilized and what this positioning means for its future at USAID. Hi, Steve. Thanks for being with us today. I wonder if you could start by telling us a bit about where you sit at USAID and how you got there. I mean, you're a neuropsychologist by training. I think that's fascinating. I'd love to hear how you got involved in government and what propelled you to take on foresight for development at USAID.
Great. Well, thanks, Lauren. It's nice to join you on this podcast from the Wilson Center. I'll get right to your questions. I know time is precious. So last year, Congress directed a number of organizational changes at USAID. And one of those resulted in me moving my scenario planning team from one part of the agency to the other. The other, in this case, happens to be called the Bureau for Policy Planning and Learning, PPL. This bureau shapes, you know, development policy, it issues programming guidance, and it has a lot to do with anchoring what the policies are with regard to aid in terms of evidence and advanced thinking. So for me personally, it was like a homecoming to go back to this PPL, because actually that's where I started my career many, many years ago. Any case, last month in January, USAID said, I think it's time to create a foresight unit and we'll put it in the policy office. And that's where I sit. Any case, how did I get to work for USAID? Well, that's a pretty straightforward and logical question. But how I got to government service in general and eventually to USAID is more of what I would call a winding road story, to be honest. As you pointed out, I'm a psychologist by training, and I did most of my graduate work and my postgraduate work in basic human nutrition, actually worked in a laboratory. I managed to publish a number of articles, like most budding academics. If you don't publish, you perish. So I published a bunch of articles. And to my surprise, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said, hey, we like what you're talking about, and would you spend some time with USDA? Meanwhile, I was living in New York, and Washington seemed like a big journey. Any case, what they wanted to know was how well their national food programs were doing. You know, were they having an impact on children? And in particular, they had two large programs, which I still own today, called the National School Lunch and School Breakfast Program. Now, for those who don't know much about those programs, and I must confess I did not, those programs are the largest feeding programs in the world. So I think with my research background and focus on human nutrition, they asked me to assemble a team and conduct a nationwide study and wanted to know what was the impact of the programs on kids. Was it, you know, helpful, no nutritional impact? And at that time, was it actually contributing to obesity? So they had some real concerns about that. I was happy to take on the challenge. I love moving to Washington and learning about a new city. And so that activity led to a fairly large congressional study of nutrition programs. And then again, the same phenomenon happened a few years later. I got a call from USDA and they asked basically the same question. How are our feeding assistance programs overseas doing? And well, that was the start of working for the agency. But my work in foresight actually took place a couple of years later. And I'd been evaluating programs overseas for USAID. And I had the opportunity to take a tour of duty at the National Intelligence Council, which is on the CIA campus in Langley, which actually is closer to my home than the Ronald Reagan building. And this, the National Intelligence Council, or the NIC, they wanted a more in-depth development perspective than they had. And, you know, they prepare every 4 years a report to the president called the Global Trends Report. Very well regarded, very popular. So it was at the NIC that I got kind of hooked on scenario planning to look into the future. And then when I got back to USAID, I stood up a small team to deploy the same approaches that the NIC used. It's kind of where I started and ended up. So I think you might say my transition to government was a winding road, starting with the study of human nutrition and then to champion foresight for development at USAID. So not incredibly interesting, but that's where I am.
No, I think that's a really interesting path that you've taken. And it's helpful for, I know, young sort of folks in their early professional years to know how windy that road can be and still productive, right? So for those in our audience who are not familiar with foresight, could you briefly explain what it is and how it differs from prediction?
Sure. I get that question all the time. And thank you for asking, because these are really two different approaches and they have some commonalities. But let me start with foresight. So foresight is probably the most common technique in the futures area. And it's been primarily used by the private sector, the military, the intelligence community like the NIC. They're all looking at what a possible future would look like. And they do this primarily by developing a set of scenarios or vignettes. Now, the tools of foresight are especially helpful when the future you want to explore is highly uncertain, ambiguous, increasingly complex. It changes quite often. So foresight helps planners and decision makers better prepare for the unexpected by not looking at just one future, or I think which is we all tend to do, but by looking at a range of futures and not just today, but 5 and 10 years out. That's the essence of foresight. And why I think it's so germane to development is that the kinds of programs take time to mature. So if you're looking at the challenges of today, more than likely by the time your development program rolls out, it'll be 3, 4, even 5 years out. And foresight doesn't just use scenario planning. There's a range of techniques. Scanning the horizon is one of them. For example, if you want to look at emerging changes like the use of artificial intelligence or machine learning, you want to know what's going on around you. And it also uses trend analysis. And that's very important. So in the background, you want to know about urbanization, you want to know about climate change and so forth. But the end result is you're going to look at multiple futures, not just one. And you're going to use a family of tools rather than a single tool. So the tool de jour today is scenario planning. And so that's what our team does. And I think it's the most popular tool in the tool chest. And I think we'll get to later why that's the case. Let me switch now to prediction. So similar, but unlike foresight, it's much more precise. It's a statement of what will likely occur in the future using existing data and analytic models. So in short, prediction is what you expect to happen if your hypothesis is true, your data highly accurate and consistent, the variables that influence the future are known and generally agreed upon, and the future you want to predict is essentially an extension of the past. So if you think about it, what does the development landscape look like? Is it more uncertain? Well, then foresight is a tool. If it's predictable, and there are many cases, take demography, for example. In a case like demography, prediction is pretty good. But in a case like political conflict, where it's very ambiguous, you probably want to defer to foresight. But I think most people will agree today that the development landscape is, well, it's highly uncertain. It's increasingly complex. I mean, yesterday events in Kosovo, in Armenia, Nagorno-Karabakh, many of these are fast-paced, they're complex. We're uncertain about their future. And this is a guess now, I think the future is even going to be more complex. The net result is most development professionals prefer foresight over prediction because of uncertainty and complexity.
I think that gets a little bit to my next question, but just to give you an opportunity to expand on it on it a bit. You know, you've been leading the charge for Foresight at USAID for almost a decade now. The new Foresight unit really signals a recognition by the agency of a growing need to invest in scenario planning. So what's changed? Why did USAID decide now to formally establish a Foresight unit?
It's a great question. Of course, I've been waiting for this to happen for a while. I guess the lesson is you have to be patient. But in any case, why all of a sudden is Foresight taking on a much higher profile at USAID than ever before? And I think the short answer, as you might suspect, is COVID-19. So once WHO declared COVID-19 a pandemic, USAID quickly created a task force to assess and to manage mainly the more immediate challenges of COVID-19. But as the task force began to, you know, look at the immediate things that needed to be done, it began to think, well, what's the next COVID-19? What are other surprises down the road? So it established a task force, which they happened to call Over the Horizon Task Force, or it really was not a task force, but a review process. It was held in Washington, and it looked at not just the immediate impacts of COVID, which have been severe and disruptive in every possible way, but to look at a range of other possibilities. So this review successfully deployed a range of Foresight approaches. So naturally, I'm excited about that. You know, I've been in the desert in terms of Foresight, and all of a sudden, 75 people want to do scenario planning. So I'm really happy. But in any case, over the years, establishing a task force, you know, that's really been the agency's default response. So if there's a major development crisis, for example, the Middle East, or let's take Ebola, aid generally establishes and stands up a task force. So in the Ebola case, it was the most serious epidemic in West Africa, resulting in over almost 12,000 deaths. So at the time, that made Ebola one of the most fatal infectious diseases and outbreaks in modern history, of course, prior to COVID-19. So in some ways, a task force has been AIDS response. But I think with regard to COVID-19, I think the USAID leadership said, we've got to be better prepared. And why is that the case? Well, COVID-19 is really different from Ebola and other disasters. You know, its magnitude, its scale, its global reach, the speed of transmission, which we're still trying to understand. The pandemic had acute impacts like the other challenges. COVID-19 actually had another set of unsettling impacts, and that is it disrupted our agency operations, our staffing, who goes to the field, and our service delivery operations, you know, providing education, providing food. All of that was disrupted. And not only for us, but for our implementing partners around the world, our country counterpart government organizations, ministries, NGOs. And I would say that the whole donor community was disrupted in their operations, much like aid was. I think the leadership realized that we needed new steps to better prepare for whatever the next pandemic is or the next highly disruptive future events. In other words, get ahead of the curve. So at least in my way of thinking, USAID's corporate genesis for this unit was a direct response of COVID-19 and this over-the-horizon review of the challenges, both acute and more long-term. So for me, it's a silver lining in terms of my profession, but obviously I wish it would have never happened.
Right. Well, and the Foresight unit being housed in the policy office is an interesting move too. So, you know, how do they take what you produce in the unit and allow it to really influence and help shape policy? How do you see that playing out?
Well, I really haven't had a chance to see it play out fully yet, but I do share your, you know, surprise. I mean, up until this point, our Foresight unit has been working directly in the field with missions out of a bureau that was called the Global Development Lab, which has now been transformed into another unit. So when I was told that the Foresight unit is now going to be housed in a policy office, I was a little surprised myself. And on the one hand, you know, the COVID-19 task force and this over the horizon strategy review, I think it convinced the leadership that we really need to sort of be ahead of the curve and use foresight and trends and so forth. And that still didn't, in my mind, point directly to, you know, a policy office. So I'll kind of think a little bit about that. But then I think a good case can be made that foresight belongs in a policy office because it affects a number of sectors, governance, economic growth, and so forth. And so for almost every one of those sectors, the agency usually issues an actual policy. So I think bringing information about a trend to link up with a policy, I think you can make a good case for a foresight unit being established in a policy office. And another value that comes to mind is that a policy office usually contributes to the larger interagency process. So when I was working primarily with missions, it wasn't really connected to other parts of State Department, Millennium Challenge Corporation, and so forth. But the policy office, unlike the lab where I was located, by being in a policy office, you can really influence the development of the U.S. national security strategy, where development is a key component. So I think it's too early to tell whether what our role will be, but that's my hope, that we'll be able to, you know, to contribute to other things besides just missions. So for me, it's pushing up to higher level interagency, but also remaining our strength in support to missions. So I think it's a helpful way to think about foresight being in the policy front, because we're gaining exposure without losing contact to the field. So I think it's a plus. I hope so.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you're engaging externally to USAID. You know, the Foresight Unit is not unique to USAID. The OECD Development Assistance Committee, for example, has a Foresight Unit. So do you see a relationship between the work that you're doing within USAID and working with outside entities that are doing similar work?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked. You know, when I first started, I didn't call the work we did Foresight. It had a kind of European ring to it. Future seemed, I don't know, more on this continent, but for reasons much higher than my own, we adopted the foresight. And actually, that's the term that the OECD DAC and others use, foresight. I'm happy with both, futures, foresight. They're very similar. But we have a lot in common with the OECD DAC foresight unit in that, you know, we're both involved in using foresight for development. We both use the same tools like scenario planning to look into the future. Like the DAC Foresight Unit, we're also committed to advancing progress towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goals in the countries where we work, of course. And the Foresight Unit at the DAC and our own Foresight Unit, I think we share in common the notion that if you're going to develop policies, they ought to be driven by data and analysis. Now, the DAC's Foresight Unit has a much larger goal in that it is trying to coordinate and collaborate among its many donors. So in some ways, they have a larger task than we do. USAID has worked with the Foresight Unit at the DAC before. We've showed them how we do foresight. We've shared with them the countries we've been to. And I think it really helps. It's a real advantage that we have a full-time USAID representative co-located in Paris with the DAC. And that person is actively involved in foresight. So, you know, we have an expanded team of one person sitting in Paris. But our role with the DAC foresight continues to expand. And I want to share with you something that I think this is the first place we've announced it, is that next month at the DAC, the US and the Swiss will co-chair an annual meeting that the DAC Foresight Unit holds called the Friends of Foresight. And we've already decided that a number of the issues are going to revolve around COVID-19. And so we're looking at the green and digital COVID-19 recovery and examining, you know, what the socioeconomic recovery from the pandemic looked like. So Back to your question, we work closely, have worked closely with the DAC, and our plan is to keep working closely with the DAC because we learn from other donor members. We do not have a monopoly on what the best practices are, what the lessons learned, how to deploy any of the foresight tools. We don't have that monopoly. And conversely, the members there are interested in what we do. So I think it's a real collaborative engagement. So we look forward to working more with the OECD DAC Foresight Unit.
We're coming to the end of our chat. Don't want to let you go without plugging your book, which I think, you know, is a really incredible and helpful foresight book called The Future Can't Wait, which is a great title. And I know that ECSP's former director, Jeff DeBelko, who still works with us as a senior advisor, contributed a chapter to that book. I wonder if you could give us a quick plug for the book, but also, you know, how did it come about? And do you see another book on the horizon?
Yes, we were lucky to meet Jeff early on in our foresight engagement. And that's primarily because the Wilson Center was the institutional host for the first ever USAID-led symposium. And I think that's where I think you and I met. It was about future trends and development. It was held at the Wilson Center, had members from the State Department and members from the National Defense University. So it was easy to meet Jeff. And as to the book, well, recruiting Jeff to write a chapter was also easy. He wrote a great chapter. It focused on the need for integrated analysis. And the book, which is called The Future Can't Wait, Over the Horizon, Views on Development, believe it or not, it's now in its fourth printing. And from time to time, I hear from universities that they've made the book required curriculum in their international relations graduate schools. So that's good. It did win an award from the World Future Society. For those who don't know about the World Future Society, it's one of the recognized leaders, one of the most influential and the longest running community of global future thinkers. I have the book in front of me, and I suppose it will get printed again and distributed, but I'd like to end with one quote that I thought made a very important impression on me. It was by the former USAID administrator, Andrew Natsios. And I'll quote just because otherwise I'll get it wrong. And what Andrew said is perhaps the most embarrassing failure of international development agencies has been their excessive focus on programming for the past problems, for the past challenges, instead of anticipating the challenges of the future. So to me, that shortcoming that Administrator Natsios talked about is precisely what Foresight seeks to address. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to respond to your thoughtful and provocative questions. It's been a real pleasure, and let's do it again.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll have to check back in with you to see how things are going with the new unit. Thanks for taking the time today, Steve, and good luck.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center. Thanks for tuning in. For more information, follow us on Twitter at New Security Beat and visit newsecuritybeat.org.